I'm Manila Chan. You're tuned into Modus Operandi. Just before the COVID pandemic hit the world in 2020, the European Union suffered a loss. A divorce that was debated and hotly contested for years. We all know that now to be called Brexit. But this year, 2024, the EU is looking to expand its family ties by starting accession talks with Ukraine and Moldova. But several issues plagued this courtship, and one family member stands in the way so far. So we'll discuss it. All right, let's get into the MO. For decades, Turkey had been chasing the dream of joining the European Union. As of now, there seems to be little interest by most existing members to really open accession talks for them, despite flirting with the idea of this long-term NATO member and ally. But suddenly, in the fall of 2023, Ursula von der Leyen, the current president of the European Commission, announced that formal accession talks were underway for Ukraine and Moldova. Now, for some, you might chalk it up to, well, yeah, okay, Ukraine and Moldova are considered Eastern Europe. Makes sense. They're a lot closer to the bloc than Turkey, sure. But when you start examining the purpose of this bloc and rules for membership, suddenly Turkey seems to be more in line. Then you have Viktor Orban, the Prime Minister of Hungary, loudly standing in the way of Ukraine and Moldova's entry. And potentially, with new leadership in Slovakia, Orban may not be the lone voice of objection for long. Joining us to break this all down, a guest who has had political experience in Europe himself, is Guy Meton. He is a former Swiss MP. He was a journalist and author of several books, including Russie Occident and Europe's Existential Dilemma, To Be or Not to Be an American Vassal. Guy, so good to see you. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you. I am happy to be with you again today.
So we enter 2024 with the news that European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen wishes to expedite the accession of Ukraine and Moldova to the bloc. But according to the EU's treaty, Article 2, it states that countries wishing to join must share the values of human rights, freedom, democracy, a whole host of other major principles and values, including protecting the rights of minorities within their respective borders. Now, when it comes to Ukraine, many of these principles, I would say, have not been met, especially in the way of minority rights. The Ukraine government under Zelensky has actually moved to ban the Russian language, ban the Russian Orthodox Church. And there was nearly a decade of this indiscriminate shelling and war in the Donbass region where the majority of residents are Russian-speaking or of Russian ethnic origin. So long before the February 24 of 2022, before that conflict even began, how do you see this? How will Ursula von der Leyen justify if these conditions really can't be met?
Yes, I share your analysis, because if you look at all these points, Ukraine is not ready to become a member of the European Union. Not only because the points you mentioned, like the respect of the minorities, of the Russian Orthodox Church and so on, but also because of other topics like corruption, like bad governance, and for instance, the Council of Elections. Normally, Ukraine should have legislative election last year and presidential elections this year. It was canceled because of the situation, because of the war, but it's just a pretext. It's not the respect of democracy, which should be applied, which should be respected according to this Article 2 you have mentioned. So if you look at the situation, not on a double standard point of view, as it is the case with Mr. Ursula von der Leyen, but if you look properly according to the rules and the laws and the constitutional framework of the European Union, normally Ukraine has no possibility to become a member. But you know, we are now accustomed here, and especially with European Union, to this kind of double standard, to this kind of unequal way of considering Ukraine. And I think, you know, this is a second point for me. Ursula von der Leyen will leave the presidency of the Commission at the end of this year. So for her, she's looking for a new job. She's candidate, it's not official, but it's clear, to become the new Secretary General of NATO. So she's doing everything to give to the United States credentials to become, to replace Mr. Stoltenberg at his post. That's why she's ready to do anything she can in favor of Ukraine in order to get the approval of the United States authorities. That's why we cannot, I think, this application was just for the gallery and is not very serious in my point of view.
Yes, her term coming to an end is worth highlighting here. Very good point you made. Now, the Copenhagen Agreement of 1993, that actually set forth more specific criteria for joining the bloc. It basically says that a country must have stable and functioning democratic institutions and have functioning market economies. Again, looking at Ukraine, a nation at war over NATO expansionist dreams, was designated the most corrupt state in Europe by major international bodies such as the UN and IMF. Their economy was in shambles for the last decade. It doesn't appear that they will even have an election this year. I guess we'll see. And then Moldova, they've seen their government collapse in February of 2023, a number of high-ranking officials resigning immediately following, you know, this economic spiral, spiral down, and this mass inflation there. Now, under these criteria, neither Moldova nor Ukraine can actually meet. Who do you suspect might object to these countries joining, and why?
Yeah, probably countries like Hungary. Hungary will oppose because the Hungarian president, Mr. Orban, has already said he's opposed to the membership of Moldova and Ukraine because they are not. He considers these countries are not able to become a member. That's the first type of opposition, but not now because of, you know, all the events in Ukraine, the official support for Zelensky and the Kiev regime. I think there is a kind of apparent support, apparent unanimity for Ukraine. But when the negotiations with Ukraine and Moldova will really take place, I think probably many countries will oppose to this admission, to this membership of the membership of the two countries. Moldova is a small country, so it's not too complicated, it's not too important. But let's look at Ukraine. Ukraine, for instance, just look at the agriculture. The main production of Ukraine is steel and metallurgic industry, but also agriculture. Wheat, soya beans, this kind of product. It's a direct competition and, let's say, dumping competition and dumping conditions of the traditional Western European agriculture. It will be a direct competition for the French producers of wheat, for the French dairy producers, for instance, all the cheese and so on, but especially for wheat, for soya, for all this kind of stuff, it will be a problem. And as you can see, for also for the German, for the Polish, now you have all this Polish Polish people, Polish agriculture, yes, agriculture producer who are very dissatisfied with the imports of Ukrainian products at dumping prices, because it will destroy their activity from Poland to France. And I think when all this country will have to speak, to negotiate with Ukraine, and they will get a lot of opposition coming from their agricultural sector, you know. Look, for instance, in Germany now, these days, there are huge demonstrations of peasants who are very angry against the government because they are losing purchasing power because of the price of petrol, of oil. They have to pay more. They have to pay more for gas because of the European sanctions against Russia. And so these people are very angry. And let's imagine what will be the case if they have to compete with dumped prices coming from Ukraine. That's just an example of the difficulties which are expecting, which are, yes, on the way with the negotiation with Ukraine for Ukrainian membership to the European Union.
Now, coming up next, summer 2023 found the stunning announcement by BRICS nations that they had many countries applying for accession. Could the EU announcement be a tit for tat? We'll discuss it when we return with Guy Mettan. Sit tight. The MO will be right back. Welcome back to the MO. I'm Manila Chan. Guy Mettan, former Swiss MP and author of the book, Europe's Existential Dilemma, To Be or Not to Be an American Vassal, is back to continue the conversation. So, Guy, back in 2020, just before the COVID pandemic hit the world, the UK divorced the Union after years of debate. Brexit leaders successfully campaigned to the public that being a member of the EU effectively removed Great Britain's independence, that membership often interfered with doing what was best for Britain, they said. I've heard critics of the EU say that this is kind of a failed experiment. How do you view the European Union? Is this bloc and joint currency of the euro, is this effective in creating a more stable European continent?
I think if you look at the past, it was pretty successful because European Union was able to bring to the European countries a kind of stability and also a pretty effective economic development in the last decades. And that's, I think, a benefit, and we must recognize an advantage the European Union was able to bring to his members. Even the Euros, there are harsh critics, and there were, and there are still harsh critics against the Euro. But if you look, the European currency was pretty successful. It didn't collapse, as some forecasters had said a few years of, or a few decades ago when the euro was implemented. But so it was pretty successful. But I mean, in the coming years, difficulties or yes, difficulties will grow. Why? Because of the debt. There is huge debt now in all the European countries. That's a problem Europe will have to face. And if you means debts, you also means a weakening of the currency. And it is the case, for instance, look, I live in Geneva in Switzerland. At the beginning of the euro, the change between euro and Swiss franc, it was 1 franc 50 cents. 1 euro was 1 franc 50 cents. Now it's only 95 Swiss cents. So it lose 30% of his, capacity, let's say, the euro. And it will, so the euro will continue to collapse. I mean, it will not be a strong currency, a strong money. And it will be also bring some problems for the euro, the European Union competition, you know, on the world market, this kind of problem. So I think the clouds will probably be more dark or darker in the coming years for the economic capacity of the European Union. But let's say it was pretty successful and until now, probably European authorities will get the capacity to bring an answer to this problem, but difficulty will grow in the coming years. Yeah, and also just to mention, also if you look the total inputs or the total domestic product of the European Union, it's also losing market shares on the global stage. The part of Europe is diminishing, and it will not be, it will continue in the future because of the certain incapacity of European economies to build projects. You know, the last big projects, European projects, was the European Space Agency, was Airbus planes, you know. But it was very old projects, but there is no new projects. Even in artificial intelligence, you know, in the new economic challenge, you cannot see a capacity even for the defense industry. You know, for the plane, the fifth generation plane, it was almost abandoned, you know, because of incapacity of Germany, France, and the main players to define common projects, common economic projects. And that's also diminishing the economic capacity of Europe, and so the economic social capacity, because if you have no economic capacity, you have less money and less social budget to pay the social expenses, like for the agriculture, for instance.
Yeah, let's not forget that with the expansion of BRICS and the conversation about developing its own currency, you know, perhaps to even counter BRICS currency and you know, BRICS expansion. So, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Currently, as the rules would have it, it requires unanimous agreement for major issues such as funding and, you know, loans to sister states, accession, and so forth. It's already a big group of over 24 countries. Finding unanimity is proving extremely difficult. So von der Leyen is now suggesting changing the rules to be something like simple majority on major votes within the council. The French and the Germans are not happy about this. What do you think?
Yes, I think only the small countries could be happy with the end of the unanimity rules inside the decision-making process, European decision-making process, because they can see advantage. They are not big enough to wait, you know, inside the European decision process. So they could be happy because they can see the direct advantage, you know, to have a simple majority rule. But all the big players, like Germany, France, even Italy, or Netherlands, countries which are counting, you know, on the economic and financial scene, they will not be so happy. Because they will lose their capacity to impose their view, especially if you are strong in economy, which is, or industry, which is the case of Germany, or in the finance, which is, for instance, the case of Netherlands. Because you, with the majority rule, you can be imposed, you can be obliged, for instance, to follow a decision made by a coalition of small countries, let's say a beneficiary countries, for instance, for contribution, financial contribution. But what will happen if you have a majority of small countries asking or deciding against the, let's say, four or five bigger countries? They demand asking them to pay more contribution to them. It will be a big problem for Germany, because Germany now is the purveyor of the finance. Germany is financing, you know, it's the main contributor, net contributor of the European Union. But let's imagine if you have a coalition of smaller countries asking more money to Germany. And they say, oh, we have decided that the majority rule, so you are now obliged to respect the decision of the majority. I am sure Germany or France or Netherlands will not be very, very happy with it. And that's a possibility if you have a majority rule.
Now, lastly, the intent of the EU was indeed to form a stronger block together to help one another stand economically and really to be apart from the US. Did this kind of unofficial goal prove to be true? Did the block become successful in breaking free of US influence?
I think if you look at the two last years, this perspective to be an independent bloc, to be organized, you know, to strengthen the European independence on the world's stage has completely failed. On the contrary, we can see that during this last 25 months, since the beginning of the Russian military operation in Ukraine, and now with the war in Palestine, that's also a kind of event which is also weakening Europe. I think the capacity of Europe to be independent, to be sovereign, has completely vanished because Europe has been fully vassalized by the United States. That's the case inside the NATO, but also for the European Union, because who is deciding of the European policy now and of the for the European foreign policy? That's the United States, nobody else, and European country. Look at the Chancellor Scholz. He was unable to ask for the truth for the Nord Stream sabotage in September 22. So it was a direct hit against German investment in this pipeline, gas, let's say, it was not pipeline, it was gas pipe, and it was sabotage, and Germany was unable to demand a real inquiry, and we know that it was the sabotage was organized by, let's say, maybe Ukrainian or I don't know who, but on the with the expertise of United States or Norwegian or Western countries anyway, because solely the Ukrainians, they cannot, they are not able to organize such an attack. So if even the powerful chancellor of Germany is not able to get an answer about his own an attack against its own property, what kind of independence of sovereignty can the European Union have, vis-à-vis the United States?
All right, unfortunately, we have to make that the last word. Guy Mitton, former Swiss MP and author of the book, Europe's Existential Dilemma to Be or Not to Be an American Vassal. Thank you so much for your insight. I always appreciate having you on. All right, that is going to do it for this episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy and current affairs. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you again next time to figure out the MO.